Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Corsairs, Aduron, by Ruby Dixon. Narrated by Mason Lloyd and Holly Jackson. 1. Aduron. It's so noisy in the Vitar Cantina that I can barely hear myself think. Not that there's a lot going on between my ears regularly, but there's a reedy instrument wailing just over my shoulder that's making it hard for me to concentrate. I kind of want to reach over and shove it down the musician's throat. I mean, my brother Mathiris wants us to create a diversion, but I'm not sure attacking an innocent musician will do anything other than make me look like a keffing ass. A music-hating ass, to boot. And there's a lot of things you can be in the universe, but if you hate music, people look at you funny. I scan the busy cantina for my other brother, Caspar. He's still at the bar, leaning against it, trying to look oh so casual as he nurses a beer. He looks pissed, too, and I suspect that's my fault. We're not sitting together because we're trying to blend in with the locals on Vitar Station. That's proving a little tricky, considering we're the only two Masaka in the entire damn cantina. Our eyes meet and he gives me an impatient look. Right, diversion. We're supposed to create a scene without drawing attention to ourselves. Cause a little chaos in the cantina, so the authorities will show up here and Mathiris can do some light-fingered work on the local records in search of mentions of the Buoyant Star, the long-lost ship we've been chasing these last 2 months. Vitar's the biggest port in this far-flung system, and the most convenient refuel spot. If the Vitarians haven't seen that particular ship, it means our search area is narrowed down by quite a bit. We'll find our ship through process of elimination, if nothing else. Mathiris has the hard job, hacking into the Vitarian systems and extracting the records without being noticed. Me? I just have to sit here and make a scene. It's something I should be pretty good at. I'm not the brightest out of us three, but I'm pretty good with my fists. So as I sit in my booth, I look for something to hit. Someone ugly. Doesn't matter the species. My fists are equal opportunity. I look around the place. It's dark, a little smoky, and crowded. The booths are spaced a good distance apart, allowing people to walk freely between them, and the bar curving along the far wall is shoulder to shoulder with males of every species, with one blatant exception. My brother, the Masaka. Among them, Caspar stands out like a sore thumb, and that's going to make it difficult for us to quietly make a scene and slip out. "Hello there, handsome," a female voice trills. Uh-oh. I look up and one of the cantina girls is smiling at me. She's one of the locals, the bird people with delicate yellow down covering their skin and legs that bend backward. "Got a nice rack, though," and I smile at her. "Well, hello to you." Out of the corner of my eye, I see Caspar make a face and turn back toward the bar, no doubt thinking I'm distracted again. He should know me better, though. Females are nice to flirt with, but I'm not buying company. If I wanted to purchase the affection of a female, I'd be with Shaolin at this moment. The avian female beams at me, sliding into the booth to sit at my side. A friend sits across from her, another cantina girl, judging by the filmy outfit that leaves nothing to the imagination. "You look like a male with a lot of credits," the avian female trills, brushing one of her breasts against my arm. Her hand touches mine where I'm holding my drink, and it takes everything I have to keep smiling. "Looks can be deceiving," I say easily, picking up my drink and shaking off her hand. I do a mock toast to the ladies. "Mine is an empty wallet."
I don't think so."
She leans over me, her breath smelling like ooly brew. Her tits are definitely pushing against my arm, no matter how much room I try to give her. On the other side, the female scoots around the circular booth and moves in my direction. Trapped.
"A Masaka on this end of the universe?
You're not broke." Her friend giggles and touches my other arm while I shift uncomfortably.
"You're a pirate, aren't you?"
I scoff. "Me?"
Mm-hmm. They both eye me. And pirates are never broke. You can buy around. The one on my right taps the table, bringing up the drink request system. I guess I can. I let them order, sipping my drink. Maybe I can find some interesting stuff out from them. Maybe they know something about some of the ships that come in. I glance over at Caspar, who's still glaring in my direction, and I get a different idea, one for a diversion. So, do you ladies entertain, or do you just drink up a male's credits? They both giggle, the sound a bit more like shrill cawing than I'd prefer.
You interested in entertainment?
No, but I know someone who might be. I wonder what Caspar will think if he suddenly gets two avian females all over him when he's trying to pick a fight at the bar. He'll probably kill me later. I bet it's still worth it. I pull out a few credits and slide them across the table. See that blue male at the bar? I bet he'd like company. The first female leans over my shoulder, giving me a sultry look.
But we want to stay with you.
She taps a long, spindly finger on my cheek.
You seem like fun.
I really am, I agree. I'm definitely the fun one. Also the dumb one, but who cares about smarts when you're having a great time? And right now, I'm starting to enjoy myself. I could send these two over to Caspar, get him all riled up, and when he's distracted, I can start a fight. There's a fat merchant with a few bodyguards in the corner, and a few more of the avian females at his booth, that looks like he'd be ripe pickings for a fight. I do know that I can't really start anything with two females hanging off my arm. I don't fight with females. Well, unless it's Zoe, but she's my sister, so it doesn't count. I gesture over at Caspar. They say you can get to know a man by the company he keeps, I say.
And what does that say about your friend, who is alone?
It says I have to pay pretty females to talk to him. I give them a grin and throw another credit on the table. Will you go and make his day better?
Eventually, the one on my left says and clings to my arm. Maybe we like the view here at the moment.
Flattery is always nice, and I've got a few minutes. I admit, I am pretty good to look at.
And so modest,
they giggle. The handsy one on my left clings to my bicep.
So what brings you to Vitarian space? We don't see your kind much around here.
Oh, I don't have a good excuse, so I stare at my beer and try to think something up. I lift my drink, trying to play this off all casual.
This and that? Wrecked ships and, other stuff. Do you know Lord Strake, then?
I spit my beer all over the table. Do I know Lord Strake? That's an absolutely random name for a female to bring up. Like, Lord Strake Sarin? From Homeworld? Why do you ask? She shrugs and drags a finger down my cheek, and I wonder if she'd be offended if I asked her to use Plasfilm. I don't know where her fingers have been, after all, and this cantina isn't exactly clean.
He's been buying weapons around here.
I shoot a worried look over at Caspar, coughing loudly to try and get his attention. My brother, meanwhile, is arguing with the male seated next to him, no doubt looking to start a fight and get that distraction going. We have bigger problems, though, if Lord Strake is in this region. He's a Masaka with deep pockets, an army of clones at his disposal, and a massive chip on his shoulder. If he's hanging out in Vitarian space, he's not doing anything good. What's he buying weapons for? The clingy one pouts, holding her hand out. With a sigh, I put a credit in her hand. She pockets it, her smile returning.
I heard he's buying weapons for his private army, because they're going to take over a ship.
Take over a ship?
Find a ship, the other one corrects. They're looking for some lost ship. Came in here and asked 1,000 questions about shipping lanes and such.
She rolls her eyes and drinks the last of her Uli brew, then eyes the ordering system.
Can you buy us another round, friend?
I think I have to go, I say, and get to my feet. The females pull me down again, just as Caspar grabs his bar stool and slams it over his neighbor's head. 2. Aduron. I can't believe you two keffing idiots, Mathiris rages as we race under the bridge of the Little Sister, several Vitarian guards hot on our heels.
What happened to create a diversion to peel off the guards and sneak out? How are we supposed to sneak when we're the only Masaka in the entire Vatarian system? You could have tried a little harder. He pauses to shove Caspar up the ramp, since our brother seems determined not to leave without finishing the fight. I automatically grab at Caspar's shirt and shove him through the sister's door, something we've gotten down to a science. Most battles end like this, us knowing when to pull out and Caspar too stubborn to do so. So between Mathiris and myself, we've become experts at hauling Caspar's ass out of danger. And they say I am the dumb one. We're not done here, Caspar complains, trying to aim his gun around my horns. We can take them. You're our navigator now, Mathiris reminds him, easing up the ramp with his back to me as I hover in the doorway. He keeps his eyes on the Vatarians who are no longer racing for us but for a control panel, no doubt to trap us before we can take off. Go and Keffing navigate. We've got to get out of this place. Caspar growls, then turns and races for the nav panel. Mathiris continues to back up, shooting. The enemy is pinned down behind a crate, but I see someone race ahead, and I know it's just a matter of time. In his way, Mathiris is just as bad as Caspar in never wanting to leave a fight. So I grab him by the collar and haul him backward onto the ship, then slam my hand on the hatch release, the door zooming shut. Mathiris glares at me, putting his blaster away. I was coming, he mutters. Sure, sure. We both head for the bridge. Why do you smell like Uli brew? Mathiris asks, glancing over at me. And why are you all wet? I just grin. You said you wanted a distraction. I jumped into the bar fight that Caspar started. And I might have made the bartender angry. He sighs. And a few barmaids. I pause, considering. And some cantina girls. And a patron or two. I told you to blend, he complains, as we move onto the bridge and slide into our seats. Fighting with everyone in the cantina isn't blending. Neither is being blue, but we didn't realize that was a problem until we got there, I point out. We stood out no matter what. I flip switches at my seat, running checks on the landing gear and initiating the ship's protective shields as the engine fires up, whining as we begin to lift off. Weapons systems? I ask, my hand hovering over the next panel. Mathiris shakes his head, concentrating on his controls. They're trying to detain, not destroy. I don't think they realized that I hacked their records. It's probably just about the bar fight. Then we did good, I grin broadly, and then sniff my clothes. Whew, do I smell bad. Like I rolled around in an Uli's armpit. Caspar glances over at the two of us as the sister lifts off, heading for the rapidly closing gates on the station. Did you get what we needed, then? Yes and no, Mathiris shakes his head. I got in, but I couldn't find records of the buoyant star. If she came through this system, she never made it here. It narrows things down, but not by much. I grunt, scratching at my damp, itchy tunic. So what now? Mathiris shoots me a look as if I'm an idiot for asking. I'm used to that sort of look, though, so it doesn't offend me. We worry about getting away from the authorities first. Then we figure out our next steps. Nag, nag, I tease, but I double our shields as we zip narrowly out of the gates. Just in case. A short time later, I'm in the shower, washing off the stink of sour Uli brew and thinking about the buoyant star. And Zoe. And Sophie. Sophie's gonna be so pissed that it's been weeks and weeks since we left her with my buddy Jarok, and we're still no closer to finding the buoyant star and all its fabled riches. She seemed forlorn and unhappy when we left her behind, and after a month of being in Jarok's company, I can only imagine how mad she is. Jarok's a trustworthy sort, but he's not exactly friendly. Or clean. Or pleasant. If Sophie doesn't give us a verbal lashing that scours years off our lives, I'll be surprised. I should send her a comm, but I can't exactly give away our position in space. We're currently hiding the little sister on the dark side of one of Vatar's far-flung moons. Once the coast is clear, we'll head out again, moving in a different direction as we send out a tracing signal for the buoyant star. It's pure luck that we found the records,
and the private frequency ID that the Buoyant Star was using before it disappeared. That means we're the only ones that will be able to pick up a distress signal, no matter how old. And if she's active, for whatever reason, we can just say hello. With the frequency ID, it's like looking for a needle in a haystack, as Zoe would say. Without the frequency ID, it'd be like looking for a needle in an entire field of haystacks. At least we can narrow it down, bit by bit. The payoff will be worth it, I hope, because once Zoe finds out we're in the off-limits Slatra system on a treasure hunt, she'll blister our ears with her choice words. She hates it when we risk our necks. Doesn't matter that they're our necks to risk, as our younger sister Zoe feels obligated to look out for us, and to tell us when we're being keffing idiots. Myself, I know hunting for a fabled ship like the Buoyant Star is likely going to end up in failure. The stories passed around cantinas could be all wrong. Maybe it's not filled with riches. Maybe it wasn't abandoned on the edges of space. Maybe it wasn't called the Buoyant Star at all, and it was just a merchant vessel that showed up on station on time, offloaded her cargo, and the stories just grew because people get bored in deep space. But it's something to do. I've struggled ever since Zoe left our crew to go mate with Centaur of the Jabberwock. I know she's ridiculously keffing happy, and I want that for her, but I miss having my mouthy little sister around. Feels like there's a hole in the crew, and it's sucked all the joy and piracy right out of my system. I suspect it's the same for Caspar and Mathiris. We're all looking for something to excite us again. The Buoyant Star, for all that it could be a wild chase leading nowhere, is our distraction for now. I sigh, looking over at the mirror above the sink. If Zoe were here, I'd write a stupid message in the mirror for her to find when she takes a shower. Usually I'd leave something like, "Your feet smell," or "I stole your snacks," just to make her laugh. There's no one to write a message for anymore, and I feel stupidly empty. It's not the same without Zoe on board. I miss her. I'm almost as miserable as I was back when I discovered the truth about the female I thought I loved. Shalin. I hope her new mate gave her a communicable disease. I hope they're both riddled with sores. Great, big, gross ones. And then I check my junk just to make sure the universe isn't going to punish me for wishing something like that on someone else. All's clear, though. I give my cock one last jiggle under the water and then turn the shower off. The moment I start to towel off, the bridge clicks on over the comm. Hey, Mathiris? It's Caspar. Mathiris chimes back from the engine room. What? Did you run into anyone we should know about back on Vitar Station? A pause. No. Why? Caspar sounds tense. Because we're being approached by another Corsair vessel, and I'm pretty sure this one is from Homeworld. Homeworld? Mathiris sounds puzzled. What the kef are they doing out here in the Slatra system? Great question. You should also be asking why they're hailing us and demanding we surrender. Surrender? I'm coming to the bridge. Uh-oh. I haul the towel around my hips and hit the intercom. Hey, so, you guys will never guess what I heard back on the cantina. What? I'm not sure which brother it is, but I'm pretty sure it doesn't matter. I click over again. I might know who that ship belongs to. Get your ass in here, Aduron, Mathiris snaps. Bridge. Now. On my way, I say cheerfully. I mean, if we die, I should go out with a smile. I'd make an ugly corpse with my face all snarled up. I tie the towel around my waist even tighter, then run a comb through my hair. Again, an ugly corpse is not how I want to be remembered. Zoe would be totally pissed to see me looking like shit at my own funeral. Zoe. I stare at the fogged mirror, think for a moment, and then soap up the tip of my finger and use it to write a message. Lord Strake Sarin. There. Even if we don't make it back to Misaka space and the little sister does, Zoe will know whose ass to kick. 3. Aduron. You forgot. Mathiris's voice is flat. He scowls at me, his hands behind his head as we march through the ship-to-ship hatch over to the enemy vessel. Are you keffing serious, Aduron? I shrug. Not an easy task, given that my hands are behind my head, too. There was a lot going on.
You forgot, he echoes, disgust in his voice. Well, that's just great.
It's not like I've had a moment to think straight since we left the cantina. First there was the bar fight, and then I had to pull Caspar off of a particularly ugly Sizzit fellow who looked as if he wanted to remove Caspar's head from his body, which, I've been there. Anyone that's met Caspar has wanted to choke him at least once or twice. But Caspar's my brother, and I've always got his back, so I waded into the fight instead of slipping away and got doused with a dozen drinks. I'm pretty sure I soaked up some of the alcohol through my skin, because by the time we raced back to the little sister, I was feeling good and loose. And then we had to race the ship out of Vatarian airspace, and then there was my shower, and then we got hailed by Lord Strake Sarin. Since they'd caught us by surprise, there was no time to escape.
Or put on pants.
It was either go in fighting or try diplomacy. Caspar wanted to go in fighting, of course, but Mathiris wanted diplomacy. As the tiebreaker, I chose diplomacy. Much as I love a good fight, I remember what the females at the cantina said about the lord and his army of Aani clones. We can take out a small crew easily. An army of clones is an entirely different matter, and Sarin's ship is 3 times larger than ours. Unfortunately, we didn't even get the chance to try diplomacy. Once the larger ship locked onto the little sister, they sent a pulse through our ship, knocking us to the floor and freezing us in place. I don't know what kind of weapon that is, some kind of shock collar for an entire ship, but I know we've gotta get one for ourselves. Now we're here, aboard Lord Strake's massive ship and captive. Not our finest moment. At least I left Zoe the message I did. Maybe she'll find it someday. We keep our hands on our heads as the clone bodyguards lead us through the ship. I glance over at Caspar, but he's not looking at me. He's looking around at anything and everything, clearly spoiling for a fight, and just waiting for the right moment. Picking a fight with at least 10 guards around us, all of them armed and us not, would be the height of stupidity, but Caspar loves stupid odds. Even I know this isn't smart. Using my tail, I smack him on the ass to get his attention. Caspar turns and glares at me.
What? Let's just see why we're here before we try staging a breakout, huh?
One of the guards nudges me in the shoulders, a silent command to shut up.
Isn't it obvious? Caspar hisses. We're being robbed. Considering that we rob people for a living, you think you'd recognize the signs.
I scoff. Look at this keffing ship, you noodle brain. You think this guy needs our little ship? Think again.
Will you two be quiet? Mathiris snarls. I can't think when you're arguing.
This time, the guard walking behind me gives me a shove, and Caspar gets the same.
All of you keffing shut up or you get shock collars.
I shut up. Caspar glares at me, but his gaze wanders to our surroundings, and I suspect what I told him is sinking in. It's obvious to me that whatever Lord Strake wants, it isn't our riches. The little sister's a decent ship, thanks to our constant work on her, but to the rest of the universe, she looks like a piece of junk. She's also a Class 4 freighter, which is usually a passenger ship. No one's going to think we're hiding a ton of snazzy cargo somewhere on board. As far as robberies go, we'd be a shitty target, and this ship we've been dragged aboard is of a much finer make than ours. Lord Strake's ship is cutting-edge technology. The metal walls of the corridor are cool and pristine, without old scorch marks from blaster fights or dents from, say, getting into a noogie fight with your brother. The endless hallways we've been dragged down are large and airy and well-lit, the temperature comfortable, and to me, that says more than anything else that this is run by a male that doesn't care about credits. If he knew how much it'd cost to change out the air filters on a ship like this, he'd run something smaller. The little sister, for example, has tight, short hallways, because the less living space that has to be climate-controlled, the better. He's definitely not after us for our credits. Especially not a corsair that can afford to feed an entire score of Aani bodyguards as well as a crew. So then, What does he want? We're led down another hall, and at the far end of this one, double doors are flanked by uniformed red-skinned clones. One nods at our guards and taps the door panel, then steps aside. We're then brought into a large chamber, and I stare at my surroundings in utter surprise. I expected a war room, and this looks more like a keffing fancy retreat. There's art on the walls, old paintings of important-looking nobles, tapestries from distant colonies, and a few golden-looking weapons that are clearly for show and not actual defense. In the corners of the room, expensive flowering plants curl around wrought trellises, and I swear I can hear the tinkling of a fountain somewhere. On one wall, there are several large star maps pulled up on screen, and across from the screens, there's an enormous window that looks out on deep space. Right now, it's full of the Vatarian moon's dark side, but I imagine it's a nice view most times. There are vases and books on elegant shelves, which is kind of ridiculous in a spaceship that can lose gravity control in a solar storm, and I spend a happy moment imagining those expensive vases flying through the air and landing on our captor's head. At the far end of the room, near the wall of vidmaps and star charts, is a huge desk made of impractical wood and covered in ornate carvings. It looks very heavy, very expensive, and completely ridiculous. There's a marble bust of a Masaka lord on the desk, and it only adds to the realization that stupid amounts of credits have been spent on this male's room, a room that would be completely destroyed in a single battle. Something tells me this lord never actually gets into fights. He just shows up and browbeats his opponents with his superior ship and masses of troops at his disposal. Lord Strake Sarin stands with his back to us, gazing at one of the star charts, hands clasped just above his tail. His hair is long, which isn't surprising, as most Masaka society lords prefer that sort of thing. He turns, and I'm surprised to see that he's young. Certainly younger than me, and I'm the youngest of my brothers. He looks a bit sulky, this lord, dressed entirely in black clothing with dozens of fasteners and a shoulder cape. His horns are extremely ornate, the metal tooled with intricate patterns, and he's got piercings all up one ear. His collar is high, so it's impossible to tell if he has any tattoos or scars, but I suspect not. I'll eat my trow if he's seen a sniff of war. Guess it doesn't matter if he has or not, because we're his captives now. 4. Aduron. So it's true that there are other Masaka in the Slatra system. He sounds bored as he addresses us, striding forward, his hands still clasped behind his back. You know you're not supposed to be here. And you are? Mathiris shoots back, glaring at the lord. Lord Strake scowls at my brother, his expression one of extreme distaste. I imagine his nose crinkling up like Zoe's when she smells Caspar's boots and smirk. I have reason to be here, the Masaka lord eventually states, and your presence is affecting my business. He pauses and looks at me. Why is this one naked? That's my business, I quip. Mathiris smacks me with his tail. Lord Strake just looks at me as if I'm a bug. He turns to one of his clone soldiers, and in the next moment, one of the males steps forward and wraps a towel around my hips. Guess my junk was a little offensive to high and mighty Lord Strake. Mathiris glances over at me and Caspar. I'm watching him and the lordling, and I don't look over at Caspar on my other side because I know he's shifting and flexing his wrists, trying to loosen his cuffs. I'm not too worried about our situation. This isn't the first time we've been outnumbered or taken captive, and as long as we keep our wits about us, I'm sure we'll be fine. Wits aren't my strong suit, but Mathiris is smart. He'll figure something out. And until then, I'm kind of interested in hearing what this lordling has to say. Mathiris eventually speaks again, drawing the attention back on himself. I flex my wrists and my cuffs too, but all I get is shooting pain going up my arms.
Ow. I don't see how our presence affects you at all.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?